Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the Wall Street Trading and Speculators Tax Act, introduced today by Senator Tom Harkin, that would generate $352 billion in revenues over 9 years. Mika Hauptmann, the Financial Policy Counsel at Public Citizen, joins us to discuss how a tax of 3 cents on every $100 of speculative trading via high-speed computers could bring human investors back, stabilize markets, and reduce predatory trading. Then Lawrence Wright joins us in the studio. He is a staff writer for The New Yorker and the author of a new book just out, Going Clear: Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief. We will discuss this new and incredibly wealthy church that the IRS has designated as a tax-exempt religion to try to determine its secret belief systems and what it contributes to mankind as a religion. We will investigate the brutal and sadistic tactics it employs against its own followers and former members, and while many of its members who are trapped in secret locations work around the clock for slave wages, the church's leader lives a lavish lifestyle of a billionaire, cultivating Scientology celebrity frontmen Tom Cruise and John Travolta. Joining us now to discuss the Wall Street Trading and Speculator Tax Act introduced today is Mike Hauptmann, who is a financial policy counsel at Public Citizen, a national nonprofit consumer advocacy organization. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mike Hauptmann.
Thanks for having me.
And there seems to be quite a bit of activity today in the Senate. There was, of course, the introduction of the Wall Street Trading and Speculative Tax Act by U.S. Senator Tom Harkin and co-sponsored by U.S. Representative Peter DeFazio, which obviously is one of the reasons that I'm calling you. But also, apparently, there's quite an impressive speech made by conservative Republican Senator Vitter in support of doing something about the too big to fail banks. So a lot to talk about. Let's start with Tom Harkin's bill. What do you think the chances are now that we're about to federal government, or at least the Republicans in the House and the Senate, are about to shoot the American economy in the foot? Over $85 billion about to be cut out. Why not entertain the idea of raising some funds in an extremely painless way?
That's exactly right. So in less than 4 hours, I'm on the East Coast, so it's just past 8 o'clock. In less than 4 hours, the so-called sequestration cuts are going to come down, and it's going to be more than $1 trillion over 10 years of cuts. And those cuts are going to be particularly devastating, affecting vital services, including education, food safety, disaster relief, and law enforcement. And one simple solution is to raise revenue instead to fill that gap. So Senator Tom Harkin and Representative Peter DeFazio have introduced today the Wall Street Trading and Speculators Tax Act, which would raise substantial revenue and also help protect the economy against market instability. So the bill has been scored as raising more than $352 billion over 9 years, which is about a third of the way to fill the sequestration gap.
So this is like a companion bill, if you will, to existing bills existing laws, I should say, in at least 29 countries that have financial tax transaction bills. The United Kingdom has a transfer tax on stocks, as does Hong Kong, Singapore, Taiwan, South Korea, Australia, and Switzerland. And most recently, 11 countries in Europe, led by Germany, France, Spain, Italy, all agreed to implement a financial speculation tax, which will take effect by the end of the year. When I last checked, Germany was still the number one economy in the world, or the most vigorous and successful economy in the world. It hasn't hurt them. Australia's doing well. What are the arguments against this that you're hearing?
Well, that's exactly right. One of the biggest industry arguments against the financial speculation tax is that increasing transaction costs would cause people to trade overseas. But that argument doesn't really hold water because as you said, currently about 29 countries already tax financial transactions. So there aren't too many places to go. And all of the big market centers have some form of financial transaction tax. Hong Kong, just to give you one example, a vibrant market, has a financial transaction tax that's 0.3% on stock transactions. So it's 10 times the rate of the Harkin DeFazio bill. So traders are not going to go from the U.S. and move to the Hong Kong and then have to pay 10 times the size of that tax. And just to put Hong Kong's economy in perspective, the Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative think tank in Washington, has an annual Freedom Index. It conducts a survey of all the countries in the world and ranks them based on a variety of factors, including financial freedom. And Hong Kong, with its 0.3% tax, ranks number one. So you can have a vibrant market with a financial transaction tax. And London, the same thing. London has a 0.5% transaction tax on stocks, and it's had this tax for over 200 years, and the London Stock Exchange is doing fine.
Well, it's one of the things that it's going to address, this tax, is these automatic computer trades, which in many ways is should be illegal because it's sort of front loading. The big brokerage houses have moved their computers right next to the stock exchange to get that multi-millisecond advantage or fraction advantage in trading, and then and everything's done up by computer, and they just churn over transactions almost for the sake of doing it. There's no thoughts involved. There's no human input. It's just a computer algorithm that finds a way to buy this extraordinary speed it operates at, to buy and sell stocks before anybody knows what's happening. That doesn't strike me as any kind of form of capitalism that you could defend in any realistic way.
That's right. And high-speed trading is volatile, and all it is market speculation that does not lead to growth and productive allocation of capital. And high-frequency trading is a relatively new phenomenon because of ultra-fast computers, high-speed connections, and what it is they're trading at lightning-fast speeds in the milliseconds. So they're executing thousands of trades per second, and often they're engaging in some predatory behavior to jump ahead of traditional investors. So we like to say that it's like high-tech front-running, which is illegal, but somehow they manage to do it. And you know, it's a relatively new phenomenon, but in its pretty early stages, it's already showing how damaging it can be for investors and for the market as a whole. So people, I'm sure, remember on May 6, 2010, there was the so-called flash crash, which in which the Dow dropped almost 1,000 points, and about $1 trillion of wealth was momentarily vanished. So it was really harmful to the market. Luckily, the market recovered, but there are many flash crashes every day. And we saw another instance over the summer with Knight Capital, a computer brokerage firm, and it suffered an algorithmic glitch in which roughly 150 stocks suffered massive fluctuations. So the idea behind the tax is that because high-frequency traders make profits on such tiniest of margins, a tax would decrease their profitability and discourage their activities. And then their activities would be shifted to more productive allocations of capital. And that's really what markets are supposed to do. Markets are supposed to function as intermediaries, connecting investors who provide capital with producers who put that capital to work. And that spurs innovation and job creation. And instead, what we have is constant trading and churning of portfolios, which is just speculation and hurts the economy.
Again, I'm speaking with Michael Hauptmann, who's the Financial Policy Counsel at Public Citizen, a national nonprofit consumer advocacy organization. My understanding is that the bill also protects middle-class investors by providing tax credits for contributions to tax-preferred retirement, education, and health savings accounts, including 401ks, 403bs, IRAs, and 529s, etc. So explain that, if you will.
Right. So the goal is to protect middle-class investors in this bill and to foster a productive allocation of capital. And so we don't want investment to be directed on Wall Street at you know, high churning rates, and we want it to be, you know, serving the real economy. And people have some money in their 401ks or 403bs and IRAs, and we want to make sure that they are not being hindered by this tax, and they won't be. They're going to be given preferred status.
So what's the sense then you get, Micah Hoffman, of how the bill's been received? Obviously, its timing is very poignant here, given that what's about to happen to the economy with this latest of the self-inflicted wounds and posed by this series of Republican brinksmanship actions. So anybody sort of seeing this as a lifeline?
Yeah, definitely. The bill was introduced today, and we already have more than 20 co-sponsors of the bill. And there is rapid interest in trying to figure out how we can increase revenue without imposing crippling austerity measures on the nation. And also there's an opportunity within the Obama administration. Timothy Geithner has recently left, and he was a staunch opponent of the tax. But the new Treasury Secretary, Jacob Lew, has expressed interest, and he said he's open to it. He's open to being convinced. So we definitely have an opportunity, and we need to make sure that people are informed on what this bill does and does not do, and we will be in pretty good shape.
So, Micah Hoffman, tell us about what else went on in the Senate today. This speech by Senator Vitter of Louisiana, where he came out against the two big to fail banks, along with his political opposite, if you will, Sherrod Brown.
Right. And the two senators have formed a unique relationship, and Senator Vitter is a conservative Republican, and Senator Brown is a pretty liberal Democrat. But the two have come to the understanding that too big to fail banks are a problem, and it hasn't really been dealt with. Dodd-Frank tried to deal with the issue of too big to fail, and so far we've seen regulators a little bit soft on that issue. And what we see is too big to fail banks are taking advantage of subsidies in the market. So they have lower costs of funding than, let's say, community banks, and they gain advantages. And there was a study recently that said that they gain roughly $83 billion a year in advantages relative to smaller banks. And the problem of too big to fail banks is if they engage in risky activities, the government is going to bail them out because they can't afford for the bank to fall to fail by its own. And so we need to make sure that banks are smaller, simpler, and safer. And Senator Brown and Vitter have teamed up and recognized that it's a problem, and have said this is not an issue that is Republican or Democrat, conservative or liberal. This is an American issue, and it has antitrust concerns. You know, in the early 1900s, the government broke up the big monopolies, and banks have merged to the point that they are too big to regulate, too big to manage, and, of course, too big to fail. So what they want to do is make them smaller and impose some market-based restrictions on them so that they can fail and their failure won't jeopardize the economy.
Well, once again, you would think that the fact that that Bloomberg study that you just referenced, Micah Halpin, which effectively means that the two big to fail banks have effectively subsidized to the tune of $83 billion a year, that would get people's attention, because $83 billion a year is close to the $85 billion that's about to be taken out per year as a result of the sequester. So there's a certain irony there, isn't there?
Yeah, and the big banks are being treated differently than any other individual or corporation would, and they shouldn't be. They should be on the same level.
So, again, what was the atmospherics there like in the Senate?
Well, people are encouraged that there's finally movement to end the too-big-to-fail problem, and there's a consensus building. And so you have George Will on the right, and you have Occupy Wall Street on the left, who all admit the same problem, and now we're going to find a solution. So I commend Senators Vitter and Brown on forging forward.
So in terms of the other bill introduced today by Tom Harkin, what's the next step? I mean, what do our listeners do, for example, who I think a lot of whom will think this is a very good idea and long overdue?
Well, they should call their members of Congress, and they should tell them to co-sponsor the bill, that they should support the bill and pass the bill right away and make sure that all these cuts that are slated to take effect starting tomorrow don't. And they should also tell everybody they know that they should do the same thing.
And this could be implemented right away. In other words, the Treasury could start getting money instead of having programs cut.
Correct.
So, well, I thank you for joining us here today, Micah Halpin.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Again, I've been speaking with Micah Halpin, who's the Financial Policy Council at Public Citizen, a national nonprofit consumer advocacy organization. We're going to take a brief station break, and we will return with Lawrence Wright, who is here in the studio with me, and discuss his new book, Going Clear: Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief.